Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. The Lemon Grove City Council has agreed to partially reopen the long-closed Lemon Grove Recreation Center in response to citizens' community organizing efforts, and we'll have details on today's show. Then on People Power, hear why Babs Fry, famous for finding lost pets and reuniting them with their owners locally, now needs your help after an accident totaled the van she uses in animal rescues. On Crime Beat, hear about a scary incident in El Cajon in which a suspect threw fentanyl powder, exposing police officers to the potentially deadly substance and prompting a hazmat cleanup of the area. Plus, hear about stolen items recovered in a pawn shop that authorities believe were stolen from elderly people by a caregiver. Now El Cajon police seek to reunite the stolen jewelry items with their owners. We'll also have details on a hit-and-run driver arrested after the death of a young woman struck and killed in El Cajon. The Kasner fire sparked concerns in Ramona this past week, forcing evacuations of some homes and a highway closure before firefighters extinguished the blaze. A bill in the legislature would eliminate the requirement for medical professionals to report signs of domestic abuse in patients. It's opposed by San Diego's district attorney and the San Diego city attorney. Find out why on today's show. If you're looking to get married, the county recorder's office is holding after-hours ceremonies on two hot August nights at four locations, including the new Santee facility. On Green Scene, we'll have some tips for you on water-wise landscaping, as well as news about electric buses in the Cajon Valley School District, partnering with SDG&E to help pump power back into the grid. Then on Destination East County, we'll have top festivals and events coming up, including outdoor concerts and car shows in several cities across our region and an Indian reservation, an art show at a local winery, a country fair in Ramona, the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival, star parties at Mission Trails, a Laurel and Hardy comedy night, and more. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have top national news stories, including action by President Joe Biden on climate change, the Build Back Better Act finally on the verge of passing in the Senate, rising rents and housing insecurity issues across the nation, and the Department of Justice widening its investigation into the January 6 insurrection to include a criminal probe of former President Donald Trump. Hear about the latest journalism awards won by our talented East County Magazine reporting team, learn about a new nationwide suicide hotline, and find out why monarch butterflies have been declared endangered species internationally. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
Starting on Saturday, July 30th, Lemon Grove residents, many who call for restored public access to the recreation center, will see a new step taken in that direction as the city looks for a fresh start with its recreation offerings. For the next 6 months, the city will run a recreation center open Saturdays pilot program at the facility, during which they will collect data on its usage and either continue, modify, or discontinue the program in January, based on what is learned. This effort was added to the agenda on the heels of the City Council's April priority setting session. According to a staff report, the pilot program will cost around $11,000. That expenditure will grant access from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. each Saturday, besides holidays, when anyone will be free to come to 3131 School Lane in Lemon Grove and use the spacious gym, outdoor spaces, and classrooms for individual and group activities. There may soon be a scheduling program for those who wish to pay a small fee to reserve their spaces, but if a room is open, it will be completely free to use, similar to the city's gazebos. The action taken by city staff to set up the pilot program comes at a moment when Lemon Grove officials unanimously agree that increasing recreation opportunities is needed, but are wary of biting off too much too soon. Despite having seen more financial recovery at the end of the past fiscal year than in recent years, and being able to absorb the cost of a six-month trial, a cautious approach is being charted. Councilmember George Gastel reasoned, "I don't want to make commitments that we would end up going back on. That's one of my biggest worries," he said. City Manager Lydia Romero stressed that the new pilot program is not restoring the recreation department that was cut in 2011. For now, it is solely focused on Saturday access to the facilities. The July 19th City Council meeting that ended with the pilot program discussion began with Mayor Raquel Vasquez attempting to have Councilmember Liana LeBaron escorted from the room for talking out of order. A 5-minute break was taken so LeBaron could gather her things, but she did not budge. The mayor eventually resumed the meeting and gave LeBaron one last chance. The incident was not revisited at any point in the meeting. The discussion included a report from City Manager Romero, public comment, and input from the City Council. Residents voiced their support of the effort, but asked for it to not stop with the pilot and to continue to build after-school access, organized events, and publicity. One resident, Jerry Ramsey, said, "I believe the pilot program you guys are running without quality programming in place is going to be set up for failure." Mayor Vasquez, who fully supported the pilot program but did emphasize the limited scope Romero outlined, responded to the resident. "I want to make sure that everyone's expectations are managed on this," she said. "No one wants to set anyone up for failure. If failure should happen, we all fail, and if we succeed, we all succeed together." City Manager Romero added that the staff available to run the pilot program are already overworked and not trained in recreation programming, but that sponsoring programs with volunteers requires the city to cover a large amount of liability, especially when kids are involved. She made clear that for right now, efforts driven by residents with no sponsorship from the city are perfect. Indeed, a discussion board on Facebook already has 150 members envisioning the future of the facility. For any and all interested residents, there will now be an 8-hour window every Saturday with support from the city to enjoy community-driven initiatives like pickleball, knitting, and art classes at the Recreation Center. Councilmember Jennifer Mendoza, who pushed for the 8-hour pilot program over a 6-hour version and who asked for the scheduling component, was excited to be moving forward with the plan. During her final comments, she said, "I do also want to say thank you very much to our community members for your persistence and your dedication to getting this done. We can do it again. We can make this a success." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Elijah McKee with a People Power report. For nearly a decade, owners of lost pets have turned to Babs Fry for help. She's the one who gets the call from a frantic pet owner when a cat or dog goes missing, and from the California Highway Patrol, who calls when someone's pet is found wandering on the freeway. The Hamul resident runs a nonprofit called A Way Home for Dogs, and has helped reunite countless owners with their wayward pets. Now Fry is the one who needs some help. She was driving on Interstate 805 recently, on her way to set traps to catch a loose dog, when a speeding car rear-ended her Chevrolet Express van. She suffered some bumps and bruises, but no major injuries, but her Babs bus was totaled. She has been checking into buying a gently used van similar to the one she had, but the prices are staggering, she says. And due to production slowdowns caused by COVID-19, supply challenges, and high consumer demand, the availability of the vehicles she needs could be months or even years away. Fry said she doesn't like to reach out to the public to ask for help, but she's in need of volunteers who can help her at her Humwool-based rescue facility, where there are 60 dogs that need to be cared for. She told East County Magazine, "A big thing people don't realize is that very few people step up. In the field, it's me and a handful of people." She says shelters are at capacity, and rescue groups are also at capacity. Her rescue group relies on funding to continue their work saving pets. You can donate to help buy a replacement vehicle for Babs Fry and support her rescue efforts at awayhomefordogs.com. Fry's staff says they are also hoping to catch the attention of a car dealer who would be willing to donate a van to meet her needs and those of animals in need.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat, on the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. Two El Cajon police officers suffered fentanyl exposure on July 26th during an incident with a suspect who also had to undergo decontamination procedures. The officers responded to a call regarding a group of around a dozen individuals known for chronic trespassing and drug activity in the 500 block of Front Street in El Cajon, according to the El Cajon Police Department's post on its Facebook page. According to the police, when units arrived, one of the people in the group tried to discard a bag of powdered fentanyl from his pocket. As he threw it over his shoulder, the unsealed bag opened further, spreading the fentanyl all over the man and two officers. Fentanyl is a highly dangerous drug, since an amount the size of a sand grain can be lethal. It poses hazards not only to users, but to first responders as well. Heartland Fire Department, San Diego Fire Department, AMR Ambulance Service, San Diego Hazmat, and County Hazmat responded to assist officers and the suspect who were exposed. It took nearly 3 hours to decontaminate the officers and all of their gear, as well as the area immediately surrounding the exposure. El Cajon Police reports that they are grateful and relieved that both officers and the suspect are doing well after the fentanyl exposure. The man who tried to dispose of the drug has been arrested for possession of narcotics and several other misdemeanor charges.
El Cajon police detectives are working a burglary series associated with elder abuse. According to the police, a caregiver stole valuables from elderly individuals and pawned the items. Police recovered the items from a pawn shop in San Diego and are now searching for the owners of the stolen items. Those items include a World War II Marine veteran class ring with initials RDN, a 1946 Kearney High School woman's class ring, a diamond and gold wedding ring in an elegant curved setting, a man's wedding band with a large ruby and diamonds, and a gold wedding band engraved with I Love You and the date September 24, 1977. Photos of the recovered items can be viewed on the El Cajon Police Department's Facebook page or on the East County Magazine website in our Crime Beat section. If you recognize any of these pieces as yours or belonging to a loved one, contact Detective Winslow at 619-593-5714. Again, that's contact Detective Winslow at 619-593-5714. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson. El Cajon police have arrested a 22-year-old man who reportedly fled the scene after his vehicle struck and fatally injured a 20-year-old woman. Police officers and paramedics responded to a call of a pedestrian hit by a vehicle in the 600 block of North 2nd Street shortly before 9 p.m. on July 28th. They found the victim lying in the roadway near the on-ramp to East Interstate 8 from 2nd Street. She was transported by paramedics to Sharp Memorial Hospital, where she was pronounced dead, says Lieutenant Darren Forrester. Witnesses told police the woman was standing on the sidewalk near a crosswalk in front of 601 North 2nd Street when a silver Hyundai drove onto the sidewalk, knocking the woman into the roadway. A citizen reported the vehicle stopped in the middle of Naranja Avenue, a short distance away, where the hit-and-run driver came to a stop after striking a traffic signal light and a street sign. Responding officers found the vehicle with front-end damage and a traffic signal light hanging off the car. According to Lieutenant Forrester, the investigation determined the driver was under the influence of a narcotic at the time of the collision. He was arrested and booked into the San Diego County Jail on multiple charges. Police have not yet released the name of the victim or the suspect. The El Cajon Police Department is asking anyone with information regarding this collision to call 619-579-3311. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
A brush fire on Wednesday, July 27th prompted evacuations of homes on or near Rancho Ballin Road in Ramona. A temporary evacuation center was set up at Olive Pierce Middle School. The blaze resulted in closure of eastbound Highway 78 at the Old Julian Highway. The Kastner fire began near the junction of State Route 79 and Kastner, not far from Cal Fire's Witch Creek Station, the area where the massive 2008 Witch Creek fire began. Fortunately, ground crews and aerial firefighting planes were able to stop forward spread of the fire at 180 acres. No homes or other structures were lost, thanks to the swift action of firefighters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
Proposed state legislation that promises a better way to deal with victims of domestic abuse has created a chasm between advocates and law enforcement over how best to handle victims' cases. The bill, AB 2790, has already been approved by the State Assembly and is due to be heard by the Senate Appropriations Committee on August 1st. Both sides on the debate agree on what the statistics reveal, the ugly impact of domestic violence, but where they disagree is on best practices for addressing the problem. In San Diego, domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than muggings, rapes, and car accidents combined. Across the nation, three women are murdered every day by their intimate partners, according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. Advocates for the new bill in California say an existing requirement that medical professionals must alert police when they have a patient they suspect is a victim of domestic violence can have a chilling effect of preventing domestic and sexual violence survivors from seeking medical care. The bill would drop that mandated reporting. Supporters of the bill say research has shown the mandated reporting requirement results in health providers being reluctant to address domestic and sexual violence with their patients. The bill's co-sponsor, Assemblywoman Buffy Wicks, a Democrat from Oakland, notes that studies have shown medical mandatory reporting of adult domestic and sexual violence may increase patient danger and insecurity. But San Diegans involved in the care and protection of domestic violence victims say the legislation is regressive, likely to increase danger of deadly outcomes for victims of domestic violence. San Diego City Attorney Mara Elliott and San Diego County District Attorney Summer Steffen oppose the bill as written. Steffen recently spoke to the legislature about her opposition. Elliott argues that victims are more likely subject to retaliation from their abuser if they make the police report, as opposed to it coming from a mandated healthcare professional. She says, by putting the onus of reporting on survivors, AB 2790 puts them in even greater danger. Steffen argues that the bill benefits abusers while harming victims. She states, it allows abusers to continue to harm their victims and potentially lead to their death by silencing the healthcare professionals who often serve as the first step in the reporting process to support victims of domestic violence and hold abusers accountable. Elliott's office oversees the Family Justice Center, which was created by her predecessor, Casey Gwynn. Gwynn was responsible for the first domestic violence center in the U.S., which provides all the services victims need under one roof. That concept has since expanded to 43 states and 25 countries. Gwynn argues that his creation, the Family Justice Center, has a long documented record showing the value of police involvement during intake. He suggests legislation as a broad overreach and a mistake. Gwynn says of the bill, it is an anti-law enforcement initiative. They have a few anecdotes, but no data to back up their claim that women don't seek medical help after violence for fear it will be reported to police. In support of the legislation are the organizations Futures Without Violence, the Alliance of Boys and Men of Color, and Professor Jane Stover of the UC Irvine Domestic Law Clinic. She says the legislation is badly needed, given her experience running a domestic violence clinic for low-income abuse survivors. Stover says, I see clients afraid of seeking health care because of California's medical mandatory reporting to police of adult domestic violence. She says, for my clients who do seek medical care, they often don't disclose the cause of harm due to fear of unwanted police contact. The legislation is one of the developments arising from an effort to shift emergency response calls from law enforcement to community-based organizations. In October, Governor Gavin Newsom signed AB 118, known as the Crises Act. Now, AB 2790 follows that path, removing law enforcement notification as a mandate for doctors and other medical professionals. Gwynn, San Diego's former city attorney, remains active in domestic violence issues as president of Alliance for Hope. He disputes claims that in severe violence cases, further reporting endangers victims. Nothing could be further from the truth, he says. California, and particularly counties with dynamic family justice centers, has one of the lowest domestic violence homicide rates in the country because historically we have intervened before violence has escalated, Gwynn points out. Stover counters that when survivors are able to openly disclose abuse without fear of police involvement and to have trauma-informed conversations with medical providers, abuse survivors are 4 times more likely to utilize domestic violence resources and agencies. She believes, as the bill specifies, a doctor should only have to alert survivor services to the victim's condition, not police. Professor Stover says current law criminalizing medical professionals for not reporting domestic violence is contrary to current research showing that mandatory reporting of adult domestic violence does not reduce homicide or assaults, but does create barriers to healthcare access for survivors. She claims current law has a chilling effect, preventing survivors from seeking medical care, decreasing patient autonomy and trust, and resulting in health providers being reluctant to address domestic violence with their patients. But detractors say the current research cited by supporters for the proposed law is not as advertised. For example, the supporters reference the 2020 Lippe study as proof of the need, but that study is not directed specifically at mandated reporting. East County Magazine learned that it's in fact a study of chat on the National Domestic Violence Hotline for Survivors. In addition, initially the Lippe study claimed it was based on 2,322 participants. Later, this figure was retracted. It turns out there were only 168 participants. However, the professor argues that the information is still valid. Now, Joyce Bilyeu is director of client services at the Sacramento Regional Family Justice Center, similar to San Diego's Victims Center. She concludes, "Since working with survivors for 40 years now as a professional, I have never once encountered a victim not wanting to get the medical treatment they needed out of fear of a report being made to law enforcement." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery.
Many brides and grooms postponed their weddings during the COVID-19 lockdown. Now San Diego's county clerk is making it easy for couples to get married by offering after-hours wedding ceremonies and appointments to get married on 2 upcoming Wednesday evenings, August 10th and September 14th. You can say I do at 4 county clerk office locations, including Santee in East County, as well as downtown San Diego, Chula Vista, and San Marcos. Peyton Teets, a 21-year-old Marine stationed in Oceanside, and his fiancée, Samantha Wartell, a college student, got married at the Santee location during an evening ceremony in July. The groom booked the appointment a week before the wedding. The couple chose to have their ceremony outside, though a chapel is also available for those who prefer an indoor wedding. The late appointment delivered cool, comfortable temperatures for the service and enabled family and friends to attend without missing work. The groom's father and mother, Jason and Jamie Teets, flew in from Texas to witness and celebrate the young couple's wedding. Deputy Commissioner of Civil Marriages, Mapuana Marlene Abel, a volunteer, married the couple. The clerk's office reports adding 180 evening wedding appointments at the 4 locations. The late appointments can also be used to pick up marriage licenses. You can even pick up a simple ring for the ceremony. For more information on evening weddings and marriage licenses, you can visit the San Diego Assessor, Recorder, and County Clerk's website at sdarcc.com. Again, that's sdarcc.com, or call 619-237-0502. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-9800. 7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. When Samuel Taylor Coleridge put that line into his Rime of the Ancient Mariner in 1798, he left out lawn watering. Being from soggy old England, having enough water for a proper garden or lawn wasn't a priority for the author. Still, his suggestion of being surrounded by something you can't use fits San Diego when it comes to water use. The salty waters of the Pacific Ocean may seem limitless, but they're not usable for household water needs. That's why San Diego buys fresh water from Northern California and the Colorado River. But drought and climate change are drying up many formerly reliable water sources. Lake Mead, fed by the Colorado River, is at its lowest point ever recorded, for example. As water needs increase with population growth, it's clear that San Diego needs to find ways to get the most from every drop. Water agencies and local cities have invested in things like water recycling programs, but residents also need to do our part to reduce water usage through things like water-wise native plants and more efficient irrigation. Here are some tips. It's not just how much you water that counts, it's how well you water. That's true whether you're watering a lawn or a backyard garden. Efficiency is a key to water use anywhere, but it's especially critical in an area with an arid climate and very little rainfall. An automatic watering system saves water, time, and money, especially if it's programmed to come on when it can do the most good. Cycle and soak irrigation provides water in multiple reefer cycles, providing more water to your lawn's roots by preventing runoff. By blending hard elements such as rocks or patio pavers with your grass lawn, you reduce the size of your watering footprint and make your yard more visually interesting. You can even reduce fire danger by having less combustible plant materials. Now, before people started putting in grass lawns that seemed to have an unquenchable thirst, it's not as if San Diego was an expanse of bare dirt. Native plant and flowers did just fine without irrigation systems and people to nurture them. Adapted to the local soil and climate, they were heat-tolerant and drought-resistant, and they still are. Succulents like cacti and agave are designed to protect themselves against hot weather and even fire. San Diego sunflowers tolerate dry weather and bloom most of the year. Colorful California fuchsia is easy to grow and attracts hummingbirds. Cultivating native plants is a great way to be more water-friendly at home and comes with the side benefit of also being low maintenance. The average Californian uses 85 gallons of water per day at home, most of that outdoors. With California in the grip of a persistent drought, the city of San Diego has implemented stricter water restrictions that will be in place until at least June of next year. That means limits on lawn watering and even a ban on car washing at home. Other jurisdictions in our region may follow suit if the drought persists or worsens. That's just part of the strategy to create a more water-friendly community. San Diego also has a variety of incentives to help people save water, rebates for replacing turf, installing irrigation systems, and collecting water that falls from the sky into an old-fashioned rain barrel. As water consciousness grows in San Diego, new habits can help our community become both water-friendly and water-wise.
This is Marie Johnson with a Green Scene Report. San Diego Gas and Electric has deployed an innovative technology that enables 8 electric school buses to put electricity back on the grid when needed, such as on hot summer days. The project is a collaborative effort between SDG&E, the Cajon Valley Union School District in El Cajon, and Nuvve, a local technology company. This is the first vehicle-to-grid or V2G project to become operational in the nation, helping to advance clean air and climate goals while also bolstering grid reliability. It's all part of the U.S. Department of Energy's Vehicle to Everything, or V2X, initiative announced in April that aims to bring together federal, state, and local resources along with private utilities to unlock the potential of bidirectional charging. This will increase energy security, community resilience, and economic growth while supporting the nation's electric system. As part of the 5-year pilot project, SDG&E installed 6 60-kilowatt bidirectional fast chargers at Cajon Valley's bus yard in El Cajon. The pilot was celebrated at an event July 26 with project partners and supervisor Joel Anderson. SDG&E Vice President of Energy Innovation Miguel Romero calls the project a great example of our region being at the forefront of testing and adopting innovative technologies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and strengthen the electric grid. He says electric fleets represent a vast untapped energy storage resource and hold immense potential to benefit customers and the community environmentally, financially, and economically. On average, cars are parked 95% of the time. California is home to 1.1 million electric vehicles, the largest concentration of EVs in the nation. Starting in 2035, all new cars and passenger trucks sold in California are required to be zero emissions. Many local agencies and companies are working to transition to electric fleets under SDG&E's Power Your Drive for Fleets program, which provides infrastructure support. In addition to Cajon Valley, SDG&E is also working with San Diego Unified and Ramona Unified School Districts on V2G projects. With the bidirectional chargers now in operation, Cajon Valley can participate in SDG&E's new Emergency Load Reduction Program, which pays business customers $2 per kilowatt hour if they are able to export energy to the grid or reduce energy use during grid emergencies. Scott Buxbaum, Assistant Superintendent at the Cajon Valley District, says, "We jumped at the opportunity to be part of this pilot project because of its potential to help us build a healthier community and better serve our students." Buxbaum adds that if the district can reduce its energy and vehicle maintenance costs through this project, it will free up resources for schools and students. V2G technology works by allowing batteries onboard vehicles to charge up during the day when energy, particularly renewable energy such as solar, is abundant. The batteries then discharge clean electricity back to the grid during peak hours or other periods of high demand. Nuvve co-founder, chair, and CEO Gregory Polan says school buses are an excellent use case for V2G because they hold larger batteries than standard vehicles and can spend peak solar hours parked and plugged into bidirectional chargers. Nuvve's technology enables the grid to draw energy from a bus when it is needed most, yet still ensure that the bus has enough stored power to operate when carrying children to and from school.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This week's Destination East County highlights upcoming East County events, including the Ramona Country Fair, a star party at Mission Trails, a Laurel and Hardy comedy night, community concerts and car shows in several communities, a concert to benefit the homeless in El Cajon, candlelight concerts on Mount Helix, the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival, and more. If you missed the county fair, you can still enjoy carnival games, wild rides, live music, prizes, and award-winning foods at the Ramona Country Fair. This old-fashioned event is held July 29th through 31st at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Hosted by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce, the fair also features vendors, craftspeople, wine and beer tasting, and shows including medieval and Renaissance performances, Wild West skits, equestrian demonstrations, a cornhole tournament, and live music from country to rock and roll. For a full schedule, you can visit RamonaChamber.com. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, his band, and friends will rock the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon August 6th to raise funds for the East County Transitional Living Center, which helps homeless people transition off the streets. The center is aiming to expand its emergency shelter program to help more homeless families with children. The concert will feature classic rock and starts at 7:45 p.m. All ages are welcome. For tickets, visit ectlc.org. The San Diego Astronomy Association invites you to a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on the first Friday of every month, weather permitting, starting at sunset. The next one is Friday, August 5th. Meet up at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground at Mission Trails. For details on this and other Mission Trails Regional Park's events, you can visit mtrp.org. Lakeside Historical Society invites you to its annual boutique and vintage sale on August 4th, 5th, and 6th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event will be held at the Old Community Church and Lakeside Historical Museum on Main Avenue in historic downtown Lakeside. Items for sale will include glassware, hats, dishes, jewelry, notions, vintage clothing, and miscellaneous museum items. You're invited to meet artist Jackie Hansen at an opening reception of her art show at Trevi Hills Winery in Lakeside. The opening will be on Saturday, August 6th at 2 p.m. through 7 p.m., and the art show will run longer from August 5th through August 31st. Hansen, an East County artist, likes to enhance the natural landscape with scenes and characters from her imagination. She says, "I like to paint not only what is, but what could be, and hope perhaps to inspire the future." Many of her current works are wine-oriented, reflecting her desire to see more vineyards in Lakeside where she resides. For more information, you can visit TreviHillsWinery.com, and that's spelled T-R-E-V-I, HillsWinery.com. Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of Sons of the Desert, the official Laurel and Hardy fan organization, will host their next gathering, Caveman Comedies, on August 13th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The Saps are turning back the clock to prehistoric times with Stan and Ollie and flying elephants. This month's guest comedian is Charlie Chaplin as a cave guy who wants one of the caveman king's many wives in his prehistoric past. The event also includes showings of the film Helpmates and a short cartoon, Thicker Than Water, plus a raffle and laughs galore. For more information, you can visit Saps at Sea Facebook page. The Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival on August 20th provides spectacular views at sunset with tastes of top restaurants and beverage companies, as well as artwork by local artists and dancing under the stars to music by Surf's Up, a Beach Boys cover band, and the Surfbirds. This is a party with a purpose, supporting one of San Diego's most beautiful historic places. Advance tickets are available at mounthelixpark.org/events. The Fever Events Candlelight Series brings classical music to the amphitheater atop Mount Helix on August 12th and again on September 9th at 8 p.m. The concerts feature classical and popular music played by a string quartet beneath the stars, surrounded by the glow of candlelight in a spectacular setting. The program includes classical works such as Vivaldi's Four Seasons, as well as pop pieces like George Gershwin's Summertime and Simon & Garfunkel's A Hazy Shade of Winter. For tickets and details, visit mounthelixpark.org/events, and that's Mount Helix is MT, helixpark.org/events. Cajon Classic Cruise car shows are held every Wednesday night all summer long from 5 to 8 p.m. in the heart of downtown El Cajon, where thousands of people converge on Main Street near Magnolia to visit displays of classic vehicles. Many attendees enjoy arriving early to dine at local restaurants, including some with outdoor seating. The events customarily also include a DJ with music to liven up festivities. The theme for the next two events, August 10th and 17th, are Cajon Speedway Family Night and Rat Rod Rally. You can find more upcoming classic cruise night happenings at downtownelcajon.com. You're also invited to enjoy outdoor concerts open to the community every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. The next two concerts feature Soul Persuaders on August 5th and the Jim Allen Band on August 12th. Find more concerts at downtownelcajon.com. The La Mesa Village Association invites you to enjoy the La Mesa Classic Car Show running each Thursday night from 5 to 8 p.m. now through August. Visitors can stroll down La Mesa Boulevard between 4th Street and Spring to see vintage vehicles and enjoy live music from local bands that play atop the La Mesa Lumber Truck Stage at 3rd and La Mesa Boulevard, as well as a DJ during the festivities. Upcoming bands include Detroit Underground on August 4th and Love is a Rose on August 11th. Find the full schedule at lamesavillageassociation.org. Santee's Summer Concert Series has performances every Thursday night from now through August 18th at Town Center Community Park from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Guests are encouraged to bring a picnic lunch to enjoy in the park. The next show features Betamax, August 4th, and Cassie B's 90s Remix on August 11th. You can find more Santee concerts at santeesummerconcerts.com. Lemon Grove's last outdoor concert in the park this season will be held Thursday, August 4th at Berry Street Park, starting at 6:30 p.m. The season finale will feature the band Barb Wire playing country music. And finally, Viejas Casino and Resort has some hot summer nights entertainment lined up at its outdoor park at Viejas and Alpine. The remaining August concerts are Blue Oyster Cult on August 5th, Country Fest August 6th, and En Vogue on August 19th. For tickets and details, visit viejas.com/entertainment.
See you around, East County. You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The Public News Service Doe newscast, I am Mike Clifford. A new study shows there is no place in Ohio, or the U.S. for that matter, where a person working at minimum wage full-time can afford a modest two-bedroom apartment.
The 2022 Out of Reach report reveals a significant gap between renters' income and their housing cost. Amy Riegel with the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio says rents have risen at a rate of about 12% in the last year and 20% over the last 2 years.
It's accelerating, and there's no sign that it's slowing down. So this need will be more significant tomorrow, and in 6 months, it's going to be a drastic impact on our communities.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 109,000 Ohio households saw their rent increase by more than $250 a month during the past year. Mary Sherman reporting.
The report says due to decades of underfunding for federal housing, only 25% of eligible households receive the housing assistance that they need. Now from CBS News, the revelation late Tuesday that the DOJ investigation into January 6 includes questions about the actions of the former president and his allies, that's heightened speculation as to whether the former president could face legal trouble for his conduct related to the assault. As CBS reports at the DOJ, the critical question remains what federal crimes might be successfully brought and tried against the former president. This is PNS. Five projects in Michigan have been awarded grants from AARP to make communities more livable, especially for older folks.
Types of projects considered for the Community Challenge grants are those that improve public spaces, transportation, housing, digital access, and civic engagement, to name a few, and they must be completed by November 30th. Nicole Smith-Anderson is with the Greater Flint Health Coalition, one of the grantees. She says their plan is to recruit volunteers and install raised beds in community gardens at food pantries and centers for older adults.
There's really a need for our senior population in particular to be physically active to make sure that they have access to nutrition food. We've also found during the pandemic in particular, there's been a lot of social isolation.
Smith-Anderson hopes the project will help foster a culture of healthy eating and physical activity through gardening. Studies also have shown that community gardens play a role in reducing crime. Other grantees include the City of Lansing, the Sable Points Lighthouse Keepers Association, Road to Freedom, and Arboretum Detroit. I'm Lee Wolke reporting.
And states like North Dakota need to reimagine their restitution laws for juvenile offenders. That's according to a new report.
In its findings, the Juvenile Law Center says as a young person goes through the criminal justice system, they often encounter a range of fees but usually don't have the money to pay them. Some also are required to pay restitution to victims. The Law Center's Nadia Mozafar says policies vary by state, but overall the approach is lacking.
Across the country, restitution is really a broken system that isn't working for young people, that actually isn't resulting in victims being appropriately compensated.
North Dakota is not among the states that has mandatory restitution. Judges have discretion in ordering a juvenile to repay the victim, but it is on the list of states that specifically grant crime victims the right to restitution from children or youth. I'm Mike Moen.
Finally, our Jonah Chester tells us as Virginia's farms continue to cope with unstable economic markets, one operation is blazing a new trail.
Established in 2019, the West Virginia-based New Roots Community Farm aims to provide resources and opportunities, both for producers and consumers. Susanna Wheeler, New Roots' farm director, says the group develops and transfers land to the Agrarian Commons, a nonprofit that permanently preserves the land and leases it out to other farmers.
We felt that that brought more security and stability and also offered us an opportunity to really workshop this concept of what it means to operate on land held by another entity.
The Agrarian Commons aims to lower barriers for new farmers by signing long-term leases, which reduce upfront land acquisition costs.
Calling it a clear and present danger, President Biden announced a new measure to make communities more resilient against climate change. Some environmental groups say it's still not enough.
Tracy Sabetta with Moms Clean Air Force in Ohio says it would allow Biden to use executive powers to combat climate change.
It's an unprecedented failure to not invest in a safe and healthy future for our kids. And the Biden administration must use every tool at their disposal to reduce climate pollution that is directly threatening our children's health.
Those actions could include halting crude oil exports to reduce emissions and directing federal investments towards renewable energy projects. Opponents of such measures have cited economic concerns. However, here in Ohio, a new report found that the impacts of climate change will cost communities between $2 and $6 billion each year by 2050. That's a 26 to 82% increase from 2019. Mary Sherman reporting.
And California's new budget expands CalFresh benefits to low-income, undocumented people who are aged 55 and over. Now advocates are looking to build on that progress.
The Food for All initiative wants to remove restrictions on age or immigration status. State Assemblymember Miguel Santiago praises the governor and legislature for the expansion, but says it's unacceptable that some families still go hungry in California, the fifth largest economy in the world.
We were able to succeed in getting 55 and above who are undocumented into the CalFresh program. That's just one step of a longer fight to feed people.
Nourish California estimates that CalFresh keeps nearly 700,000 Californians out of poverty every year, including more than 300,000 children. The expansion will benefit 75,000 undocumented seniors, but 690,000 to 840,000 Californians remain ineligible for CalFresh solely due to their immigration status. I'm Suzanne Potter.
And now NBC News calls it an unprecedented breakthrough that, as Senator Joe Manchin reversed his opposition to moving a broad filibuster-proof bill Wednesday and announced he will support a package. Manchin announced the agreement in a joint statement with Senator Chuck Schumer, the majority leader from New York. NBC says the deal represents a major breakthrough for elements of President Biden's agenda that appeared to be all but dead. According to CNN, the measure would invest $369 billion into energy and climate change programs with the goal of reducing carbon emissions by 40% by the year 2030. This is PNS. In early August, fall registration opens at several South Dakota locations that offer a national program geared for grade school-age kids.
Girls on the Run is a nonprofit that built this youth development curriculum. It's carried out by roughly 200 councils in North America, with trained volunteer coaches leading spring and fall seasons. Yasmina Nelson is the program coordinator in South Dakota. She says they want to help this age group navigate new situations they encounter, such as bullying.
We want the girls to understand that who they are is very unique and special, and that they should be confident in who they are and their unique abilities.
This after-school activity lasts for 10 weeks, capping the season off with a non-competitive celebratory 5K run. There is a registration fee, but organizers say they're willing to work with families on overcoming any cost barriers to ensure access to the program. I'm Mike Moen.
And Kate Merlin's two kids could not play outside nearly half of last summer at their camp. That's because ground-level ozone reached levels considered dangerous for their developing lungs.
Merlin is an attorney with Wild Earth Guardians and part of a broad-based effort to push Colorado Governor Jared Polis to do more to rein in oil and gas industry emissions, the biggest contributor to ozone smog. She says Colorado's children don't deserve to live in a state where they can't breathe the air outside in the summer.
The problem is that these regulations have been insufficient to actually reduce the amount of ozone pollution in our state to an acceptable level where it's not endangering the health of our children.
The Northern Front Range has been violating EPA thresholds for ozone ever since they were created in 2008, and the agency recently announced it would downgrade the state from serious to severe violators. I'm Eric Galatis.
Finally, Nadia Romlagon tells us stigma around mental health and lack of resources available in Spanish means that many of North Carolina's Latino community are going without needed resources.
Camino Health Center wants to change that. They're launching an effort to spread the word about Spanish-speaking therapists and counselors available to residents in the Charlotte region. Dr. Carolina Benitez runs the behavioral health clinic at Camino. She says language is the number one barrier Latino residents face.
I know that the number of therapists who can speak Spanish, who are fully bilingual, is small. That is actually a great need within this community and actually throughout the state.
The number of mental health facilities offering treatment in Spanish declined by more than 17% between 2014 and 2019.
This is by Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported. We're heard on great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
East County Magazine continues to be recognized for our high-quality reporting on news in the public interest in San Diego's inland region. On July 21st, the Society of Professional Journalists in San Diego held their annual Journalism Awards presentation. East County Magazine received 3 awards, bringing our total number of professional journalism awards to 140 since our inception in 2008. The latest awards, all for daily reporting, include a second place in the education category for an article by Henry Migala and Miriam Raftery on protests over school vaccine and mask mandates, an article that also included an interview with a top doctor at Rady Children's Hospital addressing parents' concerns and risks of COVID-19 to children. Elijah McKee received a second place award in the multicultural reporting category for his coverage of the Helping El Cajon Refugees Group, assisting newly arrived Afghan refugees in El Cajon, also highlighting the urgent need for additional resources. Migala and Raftery also earned a third-place award for their series on the continuing battle waged by East County communities fighting to block placement of sexually violent predators in neighborhoods with children. You can read all of these stories and more at eastcountymagazine.org. Nonprofit Public Interest News.
Starting now. People contemplating suicide or families experiencing a mental health crisis can call 988 instead of 911 and get the help they need. The new 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline funnels callers to 13 mental health agencies across the state. Trained operators can connect people with suicide crisis counseling and mental health de-escalation counseling over the phone. Dr. Lisa Payan-Berlin with Parents Anonymous applauds the effort.
They're also trying to avoid police intervention. They want mental health intervention because when we've had police intervention, they're not trained to handle mental health problems and some tragedy happens.
Many jurisdictions, including LA County, will dispatch a mobile crisis team to the scene if appropriate. If a family issue is less urgent, the Lifeline has already begun passing callers along to the California Parent and Youth Helpline. That number, which people can call or text, is 855-427-2736, or you can live chat on their website, caparentyouthhelpline.org. Dr. Payan-Berlin says Parents Anonymous launched the California Parent and Youth Helpline in 2020 to connect families with trained counselors and free online support groups.
They call us because they want to talk to us as a parent, or they are having an emotional meltdown because the child is acting out, or they got kicked out of school, or they got arrested. You can call us.
The state of California is spending $20 million to support the 988 Lifeline in the Golden State. The new state budget funds the California Parent and Youth Helpline at $1.6 million a year for 3 years. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Monarch butterflies have been declared an internationally endangered species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The group has placed monarchs on their red list and warns that the beloved orange and black butterflies could become extinct unless actions are taken to protect them. The organization estimates the native population of monarch butterflies has shrunk by between 22% and 72% over the last decade, and the western population has declined by 99.9% between the 1980s and 2021, putting it at the greatest risk of extinction. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, however, has not yet added monarch butterflies to the federal endangered species list. Monarch butterflies migrate over 2,300 miles every year from Canada to Mexico. Groves of trees covered in fluttering orange butterflies have long been a spectacular sight for western coastal residents along the migration route. Reasons for the drastic decline in monarch populations have been attributed to climate change, loss of habitat, and use of glyphosate herbicides on crops such as soybeans and corn. Alarmed by the decline, many backyard gardeners have tried to help by planting milkweed, the host plant required for monarchs to reproduce. But now California has banned a species of non-native milkweed over concerns that spores are harmful to the butterflies. To save the monarch butterflies from extinction, experts at the Xerces Society recommend these steps be taken. Protect and manage wintering, summer breeding, and fall migration sites for monarchs, especially in California. Restore breeding and migratory habitat, and protect monarchs and their habitat from pesticides. You can help by planting native milkweed in your yard or garden. Native milkweed is available at many local nurseries and at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College here in East County. Be sure the milkweed is a variety native to California, however, not a non-native species. You can also write to your congressional representative to ask support for the Monarch Action, Recovery, and Conservation of Habitat Act. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.